The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners, let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and this is why I don't go into graveyards. Don't do it. I just stay away from them. I don't go near them. It's just ain't nothing good coming out of graveyards. Nothing. Just you can't. It's only creepy. It's the creep factor that just keeps me away from. And now that I have this mental picture of Voldemort just being, you know, at a graveyard, just no thanks. All set. I don't do graveyards.
That's okay.
I don't like going.
That's totally okay.
Like I know those people that like do the graveyard, like the tombstone rubbings.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, it. Listen, hey, to each their own, okay?
That's fine. You haven't come with me to Mercy Brown's grave, right?
Yes, I have.
Oh.
Yep, I did.
So you've done graveyards.
Yeah, that was a one-off.
Just going to see a vampire graveyard?
Yeah.
NBD.
And well, if you're going to go to one, you might as well go to that one, right? Like, on the scale of going to, like, some graveyards or that one, let's go check out a vampire. Hey, sure, why not? You know?
Just Google that, my friends. Mercy Brown.
Yep.
You're welcome.
That's a great Rhode Island thing right there.
Gotta love between Rhode Island and Salem. We've got all the weird stuff.
There's just a lot of weird stuff. The Amityville Horror, that's in Connecticut. You know, and
the Conjuring House, that's
Conjuring
here in Rhode
House,
Island.
That's here in Rhode Island.
It's about 20 minutes away.
There's like so much weird stuff here.
Yeah, you know, let's get back to Harry Potter where there's nothing weird happening. Okay, everybody. So here we are, chapter 32, Flesh, Blood, and Bone.
All right, you ready to get? Oh, yeah. Sorry, this is when you do the quote.
This is when I do the quote, and I just feel like the quote needs to be: from far away above his head, he heard a high, cold voice say, "Kill the swear." I like that. I messed this up.
How long have you been looking forward to this chapter?
All I wanted to say was "kill the spare," and I just said "kill the spare." Let me redo, please. From far away, above his head, he heard a high, cold voice say, "Kill the spare." A swishing noise and a second voice, which screeched the words to the night, "Avada Kedavra." A blast of green light blazed through Harry's eyelids, and he heard something heavy fall to the ground beside him. The pain in his scar reached such a pitch that he retched, and then it diminished, terrified of what he was about to see. He opened his stinging eyes. Cedric was lying spread-eagled on the ground beside him. He was dead.
Not great, Bob.
No.
Not great.
No. It was either that or like Voldemort was back, you know? So that's what happens, guys. It's sad.
Yeah. What do you say we get into the episode, shall we?
Please.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Before we do, though, we want to remind everybody that if the Potterverse brings some Lumos in your time of Nox, you can actually join our patron community at jointhenerdclan.com. That's how you can contribute to this mom-and-pop podcast shop for as little as $2 a month. Less than a cup of cocoa, by the way. It is National Hot Cocoa Day, Hot Chocolate Day.
Is it really?
Yeah, the day that we're recording this, it is. I kind of wanted to do a taste test.
I didn't think that hot chocolate required a day.
Listen, man, everything gets a day right now.
Everybody gets a trophy.
Celebrate everything. Celebrate it all. So, you know, I hope that you yourself get to have a little hot cocoa on this beautiful day. So in this chapter, just as a little mini recap, this is the chapter where Cedric dies and Voldemort comes back. And it's only 6 pages long.
Yeah, it's a relatively short, straightforward chapter that...
Those two things happen.
Yeah, and it gets you... Well... As short and as straightforward as it is, I think there are a number of things that we can take from it. You know, in particular, nothing is sacred, right? There's no sacred cows in Harry Potter at this moment, right?
I don't even know what that's supposed to mean, but sure.
Well, meaning like nothing is safe. Right?
Yeah.
There's no sacred cow here. Like there's a little bit of hero worship with Harry, I suppose, but even he at this point,
and he gets blood.
Yeah, he gets bloodied, and actually the author does something really special. Sneaky important in this chapter. And we'll get to that in a little bit, but yeah, even Harry in this chapter is kind of just It could have been him, even though, you know, Voldemort didn't want Harry to be harmed. It could have mm-hmm. been him by chance. He is bloodied. He is battered. And this is the turning point, like the specific turning point, I think, for the entire series. That's not anything new. That we all know that, right? This is when this goes from wee Hogwarts to... Ooh, there's a lot more backstory here. It was alluded to throughout the series. It was approached in the third book, but this is when everything turns because a kid who hasn't done anything to harm anybody.
Hasn't done anything wrong his whole life.
Just gets offed because he's a spare. Like, think of that.
I know. Breaks my heart. It just breaks my heart, friends. Oh, well, we are going to just kind of delve into it because, you know, there's not much to this chapter in regards to extra plot points, extra pages. As I said, it is 6 pages. I think this might be the shortest chapter in the entire Harry Potter series. And yet, probably one of the most pivotal, if not the most pivotal.
Yeah.
And I think that is why the author chose for it to be so short. You know, as Blake and I were preparing for this podcast, and we've had the flu come in this house, we've had different things come up. I was laughing because I said, this is going to be a relatively straightforward episode because of its brevity when it comes to the amount of pages and the amount of words. But the more I thought about it, the author did this on purpose. It couldn't get muddled with the magic of Hogwarts. It couldn't get muddled with more of Fleur Delacour or, you know... or of Harry dealing with Ron and Hermione, because this easily could have bled into the next chapter. They could have taken this and just said, let's make it a big mega chapter. And the author made the choice to make a micro chapter, but to really end it with that punch. And of course, you're towards the very end of the book. So obviously you're flipping through these pages. I mean, if you got to this chapter and you were reading this for the first time, you just said, ah, to heck with it. I'm staying up. I'm staying up. I'm going to finish this book at this point. I do not recall reading this chapter and stopping. I mean, I remember where I was when I read this book. Mm-hmm. I was at a water park. It was my senior year summer of high school, and I was sitting at the top of the water slide. I wasn't even like a full lifeguard. I was teaching swim lessons to little kids. But then my real job was either working the tiki shop and making like the chicken fingers and the fries, but my favorite part, and the one I took all the time, was at the tippity top. You had to like walk up this hill. It's at our little ski hill here. We don't even have a ski mountain in Rhode Island. We have a ski hill. But they also like make it a dual thing. So in the winter, it's ski. In the summer, they have all these slides that go down the hill. And I would sit at the top of the water slide and made sure to space the kids out so that they didn't crash each other. Mm-hmm. And this is what I would do on the rainy or cold days or early mornings when people were too cold to still go to a water park. I was reading the Harry Potter series and I like just I remember the feeling in my gut in this chapter. I remember, you know, because the rest of this book, I mean, we're really living in the magical world. This is such a fun book if you are someone who wants to go to Hogwarts or you're someone who wants to decorate your house with accoutrement. Yeah. That would be from, I mean, if you have any Harry Potter swag yourself, if you wish you were, if you've gone to the Wizarding World of Universal, you probably like Goblet of Fire because it's so immersive. Mm. And that is what those kind of things are. Going to Universal Studios, going to, you know, having your accessories around your house, that is immersive. And I feel like Goblet of Fire is so immersive.
Mary says this as she has Hagrid's wand behind her.
Where?
It's right there.
Yeah, and do you see what I'm wearing? Yeah,
and she's wearing a Harry Potter and the Cursed Child sweatshirt.
In my phone case is Hogwarts at night.
It's a picture of Hogwarts at night. Oh, my
You just
goodness.
Looked at my drink expecting me to have a butterbeer stein.
I did. I absolutely did. I absolutely
So people
did.
Like me who love the magic, the whimsy, the world, this has been such a fun book, right? And you're just like, yay, Yule Ball. Yay, fun stuff. Harry's doing all these crazy things. And then this is when it gets real. And this is when the series shifts.
Yeah.
I mean, we joke all the time that Order of the Phoenix is emo Harry. I mean, he is.
Well, there's some serious emo-ness.
Oh, yeah.
Emo-ness going on there.
But like, we can't. We will. I mean, obviously, we're getting into the Order of the Phoenix real soon. But like, this is why it is so easy for us to be like, oh, Harry's moody. Oh, people leave him out. He's crabby. Yeah. But like, he sees an innocent child who was a friend of his, who he kind of held on a pedestal as being like the perfect all-star, like great Quidditch player, you know, stellar student, kind soul, killed in front of him.
Yeah.
And his worst nightmare, the person who killed his parents, who he has been afraid of for his entire wizard life.
Sure.
Comes back to life in front of him.
And kills.
Yeah. And is the re- and like has that child killed.
Yeah,
so like Harry has PTSD the entire, I mean, from here on out, but like especially book five. And so it's going to be interesting for us to look through it because this is when Harry's life changes. Again.
Yes, absolutely. And I would argue that this is when the wizarding world changes for us as readers, right? Mm-hmm. Because in previous books, like I said before, it's always been, wee, Hogwarts. But now, and we've been getting glimpses of this throughout the Goblet of Fire, you know, whether it is the wizarding justice system and how that has worked with Karkaroff or with Ludo Bagman, right? But we're seeing Harry's eyes open up in a much wider angle now. Mm-hmm. And that wider angle allows for more connection to the wizarding world writ large. And by that, I mean, Voldemort at this time has always been on like the outskirts of Harry's life. Like, obviously he has been a main player in it, but it's been an indirect involvement. Right. It's always been, he's been circling Harry's sphere. And when everything changes, it's Voldemort who finally enters Harry's life very directly. And the beginning of this conflict that we know that is coming, it's marked by the death of a kid. Like this is the first, this is the first act of now an all out war. Right. This is when the Rubicon gets crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I find it so interesting because, and we mentioned this in the last episode, Mary, the book has followed the structure of a typical Harry Potter book so far. Like we have Harry. He starts off somewhere. He goes through trials and tribulations. Oh God, I hate that saying. He goes through problems and efforts out of them. He uncovers somewhat of a mystery about Crumb, thinking that Crumb's the bad guy, and he's gonna win the Triwizard Cup hand in hand with Cedric. Mm-hmm. And you think, yay, end of the book. Wrong. The author does this thing where she says, nope, not only are we not ending the book, we're diving even deeper here, and it's going to get real ugly. And once that happens, the wee Hogwarts of it all is over. OVA.
Yep.
Because I, Mary, do you think we ever get back to the magic of the first three books? Like you know what I mean? Like the first three books are magical.
We have moments of magic, but just like everyone who deals with great tragedy in your life, loss of a parent, loss of a child, I mean, loss of anybody, any kind of grief, any kind of huge tragedy that you witness or you go through, that is there. You know, Blake and I have shared, of course, that we had two miscarriages last year, and that grief is here with me always. And I saw a really great physical depiction of, you know, how people kind of deal with grief. Because, you know, Blake even told me this when he lost his mom, like when it first happens, when you have that loss, it is there every day, constant. You are, you know, in it fully. But then as time goes on, you know, you think about it less, it absorbs your mind less. And so I've kind of wondered how that would be for my own grief. And I saw this visual of grief, and it was someone who had, like, it was like a bell jar, like a jar, and it said grief, and it was like a liquid inside. Let's just name it red liquid. And they said, people think that over time your grief shrinks. And they showed like a small amount of liquid inside the jar. And they said, but actually you grow over time, and that other things fill the jar, and the liquid is still the same amount, the grief is still the same amount, but the jar itself now is much bigger. And so I think that that's what happens. Harry's grief and trauma from Cedric's death and Voldemort coming back, and even us as the reader, our shock and our sadness for losing Cedric and our fear that Voldemort comes back, it doesn't get diminished because we still have the magic and the whimsy, because that is thrown in. That is so thrown in. You know, we get those moments, thank God for Fred and George. We get those moments, thank goodness for Ron and Hermione. You know, we get these moments from other people. You know, we're going to get little like heartthrob moments from Cho Chang next year. And it doesn't mean that our grief for Cedric or our fear of Voldemort or Harry's is any less. It's just that he continues to still grow.
Yep. I think one of the books that does a great job of balance work is actually The Half-Blood Prince. Because as emo as Order of the Phoenix is, and as dire and somewhat depressing as The Deathly Hallows is, The Half-Blood Prince is a book that does the magic and the whimsy and the spontaneity of Hogwarts, but you still have everything that happens with Dumbledore, right? Like, you still have these moments of Snape, I'm not a coward. Don't call me coward. Like all those, you have all of those moments, but at the same time, we're injected with the love potion and all that other stuff. That's why I really, really, I'm looking forward to Half-Blood Prince again, because the last time I read it, geez, was back in 07. So like I'm...
Shame. Where's that shame button, Blake?
Oh, I know, right? I gotta, here it is. I got it right here.
Shame.
I look forward to seeing what that is going to look like. I would say that Goblet of Fire balances things, but I don't think that it does as good of a job as Half-Blood Prince, and I definitely don't think it does as good of a job as Azkaban, right? Because, yes, there is whimsy, there's magic, and there's all the stuff, but it's so dominant throughout the book, and then it is bookended, well, I'm sorry, it is marked by the end of what's happening here, and that then it's when it all takes a turn. And of course, it's only fitting that when Voldemort comes back, Harry's world explodes and the war injects itself into Harry's life. And you can't help but have the, what's it called? You can't help but have the world expand around him, and things become a little bit more bitter, a little bit, because at the end of this book, and with all the things that have been happening, I question whether or not the Wizarding World is as pure and as magical as you think that it is.
But like, isn't that how everyone's childhood is? Isn't that everyone? You wake up one day as a child, maybe, you know, a 14-year-old, and you realize your parents aren't superheroes, that they mess up, and they mess up big.
Yes.
Or that your teacher, oh my gosh, you see your teacher out at the supermarket and they have a life, like the whole world. And this is more like little, small things, but we all have those moments generally around these early teenage years where you start to become more cognizant about the fact that there's homeless people, the fact that there's death and destruction in the world. I mean, this was the age, you know, where we had to start doing, like, I'm just thinking about our own high school times. Like, we had to start doing bomb drills all this kind of stuff, you know? So I'm saying that there are things that happen, and because I know we have young listeners, like, there are things that happen as you become a teen where your eyes are more opened to the more darker, scary things of this world. And
you start to realize that not everybody's your friend.
Yeah.
Not everybody's your friend. In fact, There are people out there that are actually actively trying to hurt you. I mean, like, maybe not necessarily you,
not
but like
you
the
listening.
Royal you.
Don't worry.
There are people that are out there that will actively hurt somebody for the sake of hurting them. Mm-hmm. And that's emotional. That is physical. That is in any way that you can think of, there's a hurt for it. Mm. And there are people that will enact that hurt. And then even as you get older, you start seeing that the people that are in charge of things don't always make the right decisions. Mm-hmm. They make poor decisions because, you know, maybe they just made a mistake. Or you recognize something is up with this person and maybe they're making a wrong decision on purpose. And it can get difficult. It can get difficult to see good. It can get difficult to see what makes you happy, and you have to constant vigilance, right? Like it's probably not a coincidence that Mad-Eye Moody or Faux Moody says this at the beginning of the book. You have to have constant vigilance, and that's true. Every day is a new day. Mm-hmm. But it also brings new challenges and it brings new hardships. And Harry at this moment is exposed to this hardship in a big way with Cedric dying in such a useless and frivolous manner. Mm-hmm. Right. And not only, but in a frivolous kind of way, like he's treated as nothing more than like a paperweight.
Yep.
Kill the spare, he's not even referred to as a human, just kill the spare.
Yeah.
It's sad. It is jolting. It reminds me, I don't like mixing shows or stories here, but it almost reminds me of The Red Wedding.
Well, this is a kid-friendly
podcast. No, I know. I'm not going to get into it, but for those of you who watched Game of Thrones, it reminds me of The Red Wedding. I remember when I read that book, when that chapter happened, I threw the book across the room and I was like, I can't right now. Mm-hmm. I just can't. And I imagine that as a reader, when you haven't seen the film yet, when you hear this chapter, you probably get the same feeling. Is that the case? Because Mary, you saw The Red Wedding on the show. Did you get the same feeling?
No, that was totally different. So I'm sorry, I can't like
box no, that's
it
fine.
Differently.
No, that's fine. I understand. I get it. But it is what it is.
You know, so as we move into this, and I just think it's so incredibly sad, this whole chapter, the boys, of course, get the Horcrux and they're questioning. Cedric questions, was this part of it? Did someone tell you that this was going to be a port key and that we were going to travel somewhere?
Yeah.
Because they're thinking, is this something else? Are we not yet done? Here we thought, you get the cup, da-da, you're done, but maybe we're not done. And Cedric, of course, is the one that says, let's pull our wands out. And Harry's comforted by that. He's comforted that Cedric is the one that pretty much says, like, I'm scared and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's certainly a microcosm for the entire book, mm-hmm. right? This one chapter is representative of not only the turn that happens in this chapter, clearly, but the turn that happens in the story on a macro scale.
Yeah.
Right.
And then through the mist in front of him, he saw with an icy surge of terror, a dark outline of a man. Oh, wait, this is before when he's coming out of the cauldron. I have like my little quotes out. But what's interesting is that Harry and Cedric see Wormtail coming out through the mist and the fog. And they don't run away. They don't hex him. They don't do anything. And reading it, you know, so many times, I was wondering, like, why didn't they do something? Like, could Harry have done something? But they had just come back from, like, a sphinx who was doing riddles,
right,
and all these things. So they had all these scary kind of creatures, a boggart, like, come at them, one of which was just talking to them that they didn't, right, even necessarily need to fight. So I think that there was a reason for that hesitancy, even if it was just a couple of seconds of hesitating, of shooting a spell at Peter Pettigrew. And then, of course, Harry has the worst headache of his life.
Yeah, it brings him to his knees.
And makes him vomit.
Yeah.
Like, his headache is so bad, because I have had some people who've wondered, like, well, why didn't Harry Expelliarmus or block the spell that was going to be hitting Cedric? But we have to remember, this all happened so quickly, but also Harry was incapacitated with pain.
Yeah, and this is the thing that I mentioned earlier that I wanted to get to, Mary. The author does something that I think is really important, and she gives Harry a complete out in all of this. Because the natural question, Mary, that you brought up is, why didn't Harry do anything? What is Harry's culpability in all of this? And the author makes it so that Harry doesn't have any culpability. Mm-hmm. She whisks both of the boys away, and it completely disorients them. Harry is already hurt. She makes it so that when Peter Pettigrew appears, even though he doesn't know that it's Peter Pettigrew at that moment, Harry is incapacitated. As you said, he's vomiting.
He drops his wand.
He is unable to move, mm-hmm, because he is so bowled over by pain. So it gives Harry a complete out in what happens to Cedric, mm-hmm, right? But the author also does something really important as well. Later on, when Peter Pettigrew is making the potion or whatever the heck it is for Voldemort to go into, she mentions that Harry is held so tightly that he cannot move. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no movement whatsoever. All he could do was just watch.
This tying him from neck to ankles.
Right.
Oh.
And this is another instance of the author giving Harry, or making sure that Harry has no culpability whatsoever. She incapacitates him so that he cannot prevent Wormtail from getting his blood. He cannot prevent Wormtail from dropping Voldemort in. Mm-hmm. And all he can do is just wish that the little blackish, black, reddish, whatever it is, little inhuman baby drowns in the cauldron. Mm-hmm. And that's all he can do. That is so important to Harry's character and keeping him 100% innocent in all of this. Did you find that Harry had any culpability in it?
No.
Well, when you first read it or whatever?
No. I mean, and mind you, because I was in such a frenzy, I didn't stop, you know, week by week, chapter by chapter. I was just flipping through the pages at the top of the water slide. but no, you're just there frightened with him. I think, you know, for so much of these books, we're there with Harry. You know, we are sitting next to him, living this with him. So you are frozen and unable to fight as well. And I thought that that was really neat, that we as readers feel as helpless as Harry to stop what we see coming.
Sure, sure.
And of course, what ends up happening is Peter Pettigrew goes through this whole ritual. He creates this potion to bring Voldemort back to life, back to a bigger form. And what's interesting, we'll hear it more in the next chapter when Voldemort does his maniacal bad guy speech. But obviously, we know in book one, Voldemort was able to stay alive on the back of Quirrell's head by drinking
unicorn blood. Yes.
And then in the beginning of this book, he asks Peter Pettigrew to milk.
I don't remember.
Not a cow.
A unicorn?
Nagini.
Oh,
yeah. He milks Nagini.
That's right.
And mind you,
I remember questioning yes. whether or not
so technically
snakes
milking
had nipples.
A venom, milking a snake is getting its venom through its teeth. There's no
I got
nipple
nipples, Walker. Yeah. Can you milk me?
Reese's, please, Blake. Oh, this is how you know it's bad that I'm like, oh my gosh, stop. When I call you our son's name. So he's been living off of unicorn blood and he's been living off of snake venom. And we get to actually see Nagini in this chapter. Nagini isn't named.
Yes.
Nagini's just this big old snake that's coming through, probably peeping like, cool, a new dead body for me to eat.
Yep.
And then, of course, he has this potion that he is put into. And we know that he needs the bone of his father, which, interestingly enough, is just the dust because the bones have decomposed by now. Whereas in the movie, we get to see a whole bone.
Yes.
And the flesh of the servant. Okay, it just says flesh. It doesn't say a whole body part.
Give me a hand.
Give me just another finger. You know, you already lost one, so let's chop off another. No,
might as well.
Literally the whole hand. So gross. And then, of course, the blood of the enemy. And Voldemort makes this choice. He has tons of enemies.
Sure.
He has tons of enemies, but he's made this choice that he wants Harry Potter's blood. And what is so interesting about this choice is that this seals Voldemort's fate.
Yes. Because he was so intent on making Harry the avenue through which he could live, that it dooms him, mm-hmm. right? And it goes to show you the kind of, well,
this
would it
is,
be
this
greed?
Blood. No, this blood protects Harry. Like, right. when, at the very end, when he Avada Kedavra's Harry,
right.
and Harry ends up in what we see as King's
Hashtag
Cross.
Spoilers.
Yeah, whatevs. This is how we roll. Harry doesn't fully die.
Right.
And it is because of this blood that was already inside of him. That's
yep.
And how interesting that, like, at this point, Voldemort doesn't know that Harry himself is a Horcrux.
Right.
So he's now putting Horcrux blood inside of him. But I've had a lot of other people, you know, even our kids have asked, like, why does Voldemort come back kind of with this snake-like face? It's different in the movies. He has red eyes. He looks a little bit more snake-like in the book, but he's been living off of snake venom.
Right.
And probably snake venom might even be part of this potion at this point.
Sure.
Who knows what other weird stuff, but he's been living off of snake venom. So
either way,
of course
there's snake DNA. Consider it like Jurassic Park.
Yes.
You know, you just fill in some of the gaps
yes.
with a frog, mm-hmm. but in this case, it's a snake.
So I just find it so interesting that these little things are kind of put forth that are going to have big repercussions, whether Voldemort knows it or not.
Right. And he does it in a way so that he knows that Harry's blood allows him to gain access to Harry.
Mm-hmm.
But that access is like he can harm Harry now, right? He can touch Harry.
He can
now.
Touch him. But also when he tries to cast a spell against him, that doesn't work.
Right. So that's the thing. He can touch him now. He can physically harm Harry. But
you can tickle him if he wants to.
But a spell can't do it because the two are now tethered. No matter what, one cannot live without the other. And you wonder how much one cannot live while the other lives, whatever the heck the prophecy says, right? Mm-hmm. You wonder how much that influences the author in the next book, knowing that Harry's blood is in Voldemort. And is Harry able to be exceptional knowing that his blood is running through Voldemort, right? Like, because we have talked about Harry's exceptionalism throughout all of these books, and the exceptionalism has really been due to the fact that a curse failed. There isn't anything...
One could say a spell worked. Not that a curse failed, but that Lily's spell worked. Glass half full, Blake.
Fair.
Glass half full.
But it was Dumbledore himself that says those words.
Yeah, but also it's Dumbledore. I mean, hello. For the greater good. Not necessarily always glass half full kind of guy.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I don't know. There's a level here of reality and exceptionalism combining and clashing in this chapter.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting mix. And there's no fluff. There's no extra words. Like the one part that is kind of flowery, but it's not flowery at all. It's like it is brutal in its description is when Voldemort's revealed as, you know, when what's his name is holding him. Like, that's a brutal description.
The baby?
The baby.
Oh, I've got a weird fan theory that I've read about the baby.
What's that?
That Bertha Jorkins was pregnant.
Oh.
And went away to like have this baby or something else, which I will not say in this podcast, but went away because she was pregnant.
Oh.
And that Voldemort
like
possessed or like put his soul into the baby.
The way that it's described is that it's baby shaped, but it is inhuman.
I mean, I'm just picturing what we saw in the movie,
yes,
which was the tossed in little thing and the thing that we see in King's Cross.
Yes.
So I'm visualizing that, but I'm just saying that there's this fan theory that exists that because Bertha Jorkins would have been in the child rearing age.
Sure.
She was the same age as the Marauders. She went to school with all of them. But just an interesting little fan
theory. It's an interesting fan theory. I will...
But no other evidence is given, so do not go down that train, my friends. But it is interesting that it is just called a baby, but also keeping in mind the age demographic that these books were originally written for, visualizing a baby-shaped sized thing makes sense to all.
Sure. And Mary, you said it. The length of this chapter is...
succinct.
It's succinct, and it's abnormal as it relates to the rest of the series. And you're right, Mary. I think the author had intent here, and I think the author really needed to write something that was clear as day. That way there is no confusion. Mm-hmm. There is no misunderstanding. Voldemort is back, and Harry – Voldemort kills Cedric. Harry can't do anything about it. That's it. That's what it comes down to. And it takes his exceptionalism and it makes it totally null. Any exceptionalism that we have found in Harry throughout this entire book, whether he is good, great, or brave, whatever, it's all null in this chapter. Mm-hmm. His agency is gone and it's all as a result of Voldemort. It's an interesting chapter.
Who's naked and needs a robe.
Robe me.
Robe me.
Come on, bro. Put your own robe on.
No, he's Voldemort.
Lastly.
That's not how he rolls.
Lastly, I found this and I want to read it. I think this was a cool pull here. And it says, there's a yew tree in the graveyard, which is a clever tie-in. Yew is associated with death and also the same type of wood that actually makes up Voldemort's wand. Mm. According to the Potterverse, according to, you know, the world of Harry Potter, a yew wand is meant to confer the power of life and death to its user. This does not
to
mean,
its user.
Yeah. This does not mean that the person who wields one is automatically evil. In fact, it could be precisely the opposite, that they are a great protector of life, in fact. But yew wands do have a tendency to choose epic personalities. And they have reputations for dueling and curses. Mm. All interesting stuff. And if you note too, there was a yew tree at the house at the beginning of the book as well. The author makes mention of it. Mm. So,
speaking about the author, apparently the author, when she told her publisher about the infant baby coming to become the risen Voldemort. Mm. Her publisher was deeply disturbed and nearly vomited.
Well, the way that she wrote it, I mean, I gotta find it, because if you can vamp for me for just 1 minute.
But that's why the rumor is about Bertha Jorkins. I'm just saying. Okay, I'm vamping.
Yeah,
I'm
vamping.
I mean, there's not much left to vamp about. The hand that our Peter Pettigrew Wormtail cuts off, of course, is going to play a significant role in the future. So
okay,
if you're still with us and you have not read the series, but you don't mind all our spoilers, just note that it's going to be important.
All right. He could hear noises at his feet. He looked down and saw a gigantic snake slithering through the grass, circling the headstone where he was tied. Wormtail's fast, wheezy breathing was growing louder again. It sounded as though he was forcing something heavy across the ground. Then he came back within Harry's range of vision, and Harry saw him pushing a stone cauldron to the foot of the grave. It was full of what appeared to be water. Harry could hear it slopping around, and it was larger than any cauldron Harry had ever used, a great stone belly large enough for a full-grown man to sit in. The thing inside the bundle of robes on the ground was stirring more persistently, as though it was trying to free itself. Now Wormtail was busy busying himself at the bottom of the cauldron with a wand. Suddenly, there was crackling flames beneath it. The large blah, blah, blah. Where the hell is it?
I don't know.
I just found it.
You know.
Here it is. Okay, sorry. It was as though Wormtail had flipped over a stone and revealed something ugly, slimy, and blind. But worse, 100 times worse. The thing Wormtail had been carrying had the shape of a crouched human child, except that Harry had never seen anything less like a child. It was hairless and scaly-looking, a dark, raw, reddish-black. Its arms and legs were thin and feeble, and its face. No child alive ever had a face like that. It was flat and snake-like, with gleaming red eyes. The thing seemed almost helpless. It raised its thin arms, put them around Wormtail's neck, and Wormtail lifted it. As he did so, his hood fell back, and Harry saw the look of revulsion on Wormtail's weak, pale face in the firelight as he carried the creature to the rim of the cauldron. For one moment, Harry saw the evil, flat face illuminated in the sparks dancing on the surface of the potion. And then when the Wormtail lowered the creature into the cauldron, there was a hiss, and it vanished below the surface. Harry heard its frail body hit the bottom with a soft thud. Let it drown, Harry thought, his scar burning almost past endurance. Please, let it drown. Oh, man. I mean, you just can't get any better than that.
You can't.
Even though you have no idea what this thing looks like, in your brain, you're getting an idea.
Oh, you're getting a feeling.
You're getting something. And it's telling you that whatever this is, it ain't good.
No, and obviously, you know, what's interesting is as we go forward and we learn more about Horcruxes and the dark arts and books and things that like really books aren't really written about, makes you wonder, was this potion that brought this baby like Voldemort to life, is this something that Horace Slughorn told our wee little Tom Riddle about? Or was it in a book that maybe he referenced? Like, I feel like this is like the final bring yourself back Horcrux step.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, here's how you come back. The Horcruxes keep you alive. They like, you know, tread water for a little bit. And then you do this bippity boppity boo.
And you're back.
Just make sure the cauldron's big enough for you. Or is it going to look like those babies in pumpkin pictures? You know, the ones in the jack-o'-lanterns?
The arms sticking out. Oh, that's funny. Oh, so that's that, Marvin. You got anything else you want to say about this chapter? All right. So listen, ladies and gents, we actually have a hard out right now. We have to get going to go pick up our children. So we do not have a different perspective for this episode. What?
No, we don't.
Oh, no, we don't. That's right.
Our kids have after school art.
That's right. I forgot about that.
I got you.
Okay. Never mind. We can do a different perspective.
Okay.
I just looked at the time. I'm like, oh, we got to go.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Let's go. Different perspective time.
Mm-hmm. Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Cedric Diggory.
Oh, Cedric, you've had better days.
Get it? I'm dead! I can't talk. I just stared at Blake blankly.
Mary, that was savage. Holy smokes.
What the heck am I going to be, Nagini? There's only 3 people in this chapter. Well, five of you include the snake and the dead person. I know.
You've been a lot of different
things. I know. This is not a Nagini-worthy chapter. Cedric's last stand.
That was savage. Oh, my God. Dropping the hammer on all the Hufflepuffs out there.
Oh, no, I gave him his moment.
Oh, man. Moment.
You're welcome, Blake. Oh,
good job, man.
You can always count on me.
All right, kiddo. Oh, man. What a different... That different perspective is... That's an all-timer right there.
You're welcome.
Oh, that was good. All right. Anything else you want to say about this chapter? Any other ideas, thoughts?
No.
Communiques?
He's back.
He's back.
He's back.
That's my son. Oh, man. How crazy must Harry feel when everyone's like, yeah, nah, he ain't back. Like later on.
Yeah, but like a lot. That's what we're going to visit in the next book.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, think that you just saw this kid get killed in the worst way. Like, they've been talking about unforgivable curses this entire book, mm-hmm. and you get the unforgivable curse. Like, the one, like, the base of the entire unforgivable curse credo.
I'm just picturing if Harry Potter took place during TikTok time, and there were people who were like, no, the earth is flat. The earth is flat. Don't believe Harry Potter. Voldemort is not back.
Don't get me started on flat earth.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I know how you feel about it.
Oh, those people. Just did, like, deny science. How do you,
that's
like,
what I'm
how
saying.
Do you deny science?
That's what I'm saying.
Freaking flat earth.
I know, Blake. I know. Well, there you go, folks.
Oh, man.
Flesh, blood, and bone. Oh, speaking of which,
yeah.
We actually have a special song to go out to. So we're going to listen to it for a little bit.
We do.
Yes, we do. I sent it to you in Messenger.
Okay.
This is what's fun when you're married to someone and you have multiple ways of communicating. They may not always get your memo via email, text,
Facebook,
real life, snail mail. Yeah, because
I'm getting emails.
Snail mail. You know, interdepartment memos, the little airplanes.
I'm waiting for
maybe
an owl to come.
I know. Like, I'm surprised you didn't get this. Well, I'm actually quite happy because I was nervous you were actually going to listen to it ahead of time, and I didn't want you to.
Oh, so there it is. It says, please play at end.
Yeah, you're welcome. I open at the close.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you got to let me get to it here. Hold on.
I open at the close. You're welcome. Number three.
Okay.
Doesn't it say flesh, blood, and bone?
Yes.
Okay, so take your headphones off so I can listen to a little bit too.
Okay, hold on.
And here we go, friends. We're going to listen to Flesh, Blood, and Bone by Harry and the Potters.
Yeah, it's only a preview. It'll only let me do a preview. Sorry.
Oh my gosh. Find it on YouTube. How do you not have music? How do you not have Apple Music? I have Apple Music.
Because I don't have Apple Music because you got Apple Music.
No, it should be just shared across all devices.
All right.
Fun facts, friends. If you or your children like to listen to the audiobooks with Jim Dale, this chapter took about 12 minutes. No fun accents in this one, alas, aside from Voldemort's. You know,
you couldn't.
I tried to do something simple. I thought that you might like a closing song.
I would love
I
the closing
found
song
the closing
idea.
Song, literally the name
no, it's not
of
on
the title
it ain't on
of
YouTube.
This.
It ain't on YouTube.
How about Amazon Music?
Is this it? Hold on. Let's see.
Might be a live performance.
Yeah, this is it.
You were just take off your headphones
a freaky baby looking up at the stars. Planning revenge on your enemies. Flesh, blood, and bone is enough to bring you back. Flesh, blood, and bone is not enough.
Oh, wait, listen to the whole... It's 3 minutes long. Maybe if you just communicated in one way.
I'm not an owl.
We gotta close up the show,
okay. Matt. On this note, friends, if you want to listen to Harry and the Potters...
Why are you whispering?
So people can hear the song that you're making.
I just turned it down.
Oh. So people will lean in even closer to their earbuds.
Well,
yeah. I'm joking, Blake. I'm joking. People won't lean in to their earpods. on that note, friends, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
I still get your song.
It's not enough to keep.
I don't know what else on this world there ever would be.
All right, everybody. Mischief managed.